The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We have a guest presenter today, and we'd like to welcome him to Freedom 106.5 FM. Professor Coburn is the second vice president of the Diabetes Association of Trinidad and Tobago, and we'd like to welcome you. Good afternoon. Professor Coburn.
Hi, are you hearing me?
Yes, I'm hearing you now.
Okay, so I'm Professor Brian Coburn. I'm a biochemist with the Department of Life Sciences at the St. Augustine campus of the University of the West Indies. And as you've already said, currently the second vice president of DATT.
And
other guest today, of course, is Dr. Shivanan Ramdean, who is a leading ophthalmologist. He practices at Precision Cataract Limited and is the head of the ophthalmology department at the Sangre Grande Hospital. Dr. Ramdean has over 20 years of experience and has performed more than 25,000 surgeries. He is recognized regionally and internationally for his expertise in cataract, refractive, and glaucoma surgery. Welcome, Dr. Ramdean, and thank you for agreeing to support this education session, primarily for people living with diabetes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said thank you very much.
Okay.
So it's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Let me just run through some of our objectives for today's interview. They would include educating patients about the impact of diabetes on their eyes and how it leads to conditions like diabetic retinopathy and diabetic macular edema, sharing the value of screening and early detection for these diseases, ensuring a holistic understanding of the treatment landscape and the impact of newer therapies, and emphasizing the importance of treatment adherence. So maybe we can just jump in.
Yes.
Dr. Ramdean, how does diabetes affect the eyes?
So that's a great starting point. So diabetes affects the entire body and all organ systems. But with specific reference to the eye, it can change the refraction in the early stages with very high blood sugar levels. It can alter your prescription. And when people go to their optometrist and say they're diabetic, that's usually why they check your blood sugar before testing you for glasses. But more permanent damages occur in that it can cause the early onset of cataract formation, which is a natural clouding of the lens of the eye. And more significantly than that, because we can easily treat cataracts nowadays, but what concerns us the most is damage to the back of the eye or the retina, which is the actual nerve that carries the visual information to the brain. So the retina is a very sensitive nerve structure that is fed by multiple little blood vessels. What diabetes does, when the high circulating blood sugar enters these little vessels, they attach to the walls of the blood vessel. So when the glucose molecule attaches to the wall of the blood vessel, it damages the inner lining of the wall of these blood vessels. I often say the blood vessels that feed the retina are like little hoses that carry blood. And diabetes is like you take an ice pick and you stab the hose with tiny little micropunctures. So as the blood courses down the vessel wall with diabetic damage to that vessel wall, fluid starts to leak out of the blood vessel and into the nerve itself. And it swells the nerve, and that's what we call diabetic macular edema. And it usually happens in the central part of the retina, which is what's called the macular area that's really responsible for your central vision. And when this fluid starts leaking out of the blood vessel wall into the retina and swells the retina, it blurs your vision and distorts your vision. And that is something we need to detect very early and treat, because it's especially important as it affects your reading and central vision, recognition of faces, etc. So that's something very important to pick up early, because the newer treatment modalities help it. The second thing that it does to the retina is it starves the retina of oxygen. So with diabetes, you have very poor circulation to the outer areas of the retina. And what happens there is when the retina gets starved of oxygen, it can start to produce substances that cause new blood vessel growth. And whilst that may seem like a great idea to send new blood vessels to areas of poor circulation, in reality, these blood vessels are very fragile and they bleed. And when these blood vessels rupture and bleed, these new blood vessels that diabetes creates, you get bleeding inside of the eye. And when you start getting bleeding inside of the eye, that causes a whole different set of blurring of vision and problems that come about when you have what we call vitreous hemorrhages and hemorrhages within the retina. So that type of new blood vessel growth, we like to also screen for and detect early. And if we do pick it up, try to treat that new blood vessel growth. Any eye treatment has to go hand in hand with proper diabetic management as well. So generally, we look for things like cataract formation and so early in diabetes, but later on, we're very concerned with retina screening or looking at the nerve, both for two components. One, sure, the seepage of fluid out the blood vessel, what's called diabetic macular edema. And number two, new blood vessel growth or what's called neovascularization that comes about because of poor circulation to the nerve.
Right, Dr. Ramdeen, that was a tour de force introduction to the subject. If we could just clarify for our listeners the difference between diabetic retinopathy and diabetic macular edema, terms which they would hear from time to time living with diabetes.
So diabetic retinopathy usually comes about because of poor circulation and is classified generally in a staging process. In the early stagings of diabetic retinopathy, we look for what we may call background diabetic retinopathy, which is some altered blood vessels. We also look for areas of very poor circulation, which may be called pre-proliferative diabetic retinopathy, and new blood vessel growth, which is called proliferative diabetic retinopathy. These are the stages that create bleeding inside an eye. Diabetic macular edema affects the central part of the retina, and it's due to leakage of fluid from the small blood vessels that feed the central retina, and it swells the retina. It's like having damaged blood vessels in your heel or your ankle or varicose veins, and your ankles swell at the end of the day, that's called edema. Edema means swelling or fluid in a particular space. So diabetic macular edema, the doctor is actually looking for swelling within the macular area, which is the central area of the retina that's responsible for central vision. And diabetic retinopathy is peripheral areas of the retina looking for tiny little hemorrhages or new blood vessel growth or areas of frank bleeding.
Thank you, sir. So tell us, why is early detection so important for diabetic eye disease?
Because in the early detection is very important, because the new treatment modalities afford a measure of control. It's far better to control and easier to control them and treat them rather than the very late stages. So in the late stages, it may require surgery or may have permanent visual deficit or even blindness if it's picked up too late. if it is detected early and managed hand in hand with good diabetic control, doctors are able to try and administer treatments nowadays that can reduce diabetic macular edema and also reduce the progression of diabetic retinopathy.
Well, let's see if we can put some times on those screenings. When should people with diabetes start getting eye screenings, and how often should they continue?
So in general, once a patient is diagnosed with diabetes, I believe eye screenings should start, or from even the pre-diabetic area if it's picked up early enough.
And that goes that goes for both type 1 and type 2 diabetics. Yes, doctor?
Yes, I think both type 1 and type 2. Now, in type 1, I think from the time it is, obviously that affects a younger population, and we like to see them from the minute it's diagnosed, because their disease progression tends to be more aggressive and different from those of non-insulin dependent diabetics. In the non-insulin dependent diabetics, which are the type 2, I mean, non-insulin is a term we used to use in the old days, because you may have non-insulin dependent that have become insulin dependent. We like to see them on a regular basis, depending on their presenting findings at the time of screening. Usually in diabetics, we don't see eye complications develop, sometimes up to 5 to 7 years after the onset of diabetes, once it's not well controlled. But it's not abnormal for a person to be diagnosed diabetic when we see the eye signs. So it meant they went for a prolonged period without knowing they're diabetic. And so that creates a whole problem in itself. So it's really good for people based on risk factors like age, ethnicity, family history of diabetics, whether your mother or father were diabetic. Their BMI or body mass index may all predispose them to diabetes. And these patients should really be screened regularly for diabetes. And as soon as it's detected, have an eye assessment done. And depending on their HbA1c levels, we can sort of advise on how often they should be screened. For example, someone with a HbA1c of 7, major and minimal or no diabetic eye disease can be screened yearly, whereas someone with a HbA1c of 8 or 9, we may want to see every 6 months, and someone with a HbA1c over 10, we may want to see every 3 to 4 months to monitor for any progressive disease that we may pick up early and treat in a timely manner. So I would advise people be guided by their eye healthcare professional, their optometrist, their ophthalmologist, and their GPs as to the timing of their eye screenings and the regularity with which they need to be seen in a clinic, because it's a variable thing based on the severity of the disease and the level of diabetic control.
Okay. Now, just like diabetes can sometimes be insidious, what signs and symptoms would people frequently experience? I mean, can someone have diabetic retinopathy or diabetic macular edema without noticing any symptoms?
Absolutely. Diabetic retinopathy in the early stages, we usually in the old days used to call it background diabetic retinopathy, where you can actually see tiny little swollen blood vessels and small hemorrhages in the retina without any visual symptoms. And so that made it very important to detect, because it was often a harbinger of more severe disease to come. And if we detected it at a time when it caused no visual symptoms, then the prognosis was better if we undertook management. And therein lies the importance of screening. Because if we waited for patients to become symptomatic, meaning having blurred vision or, you know, lots of bleeding in their eyes before they presented, by noticing signs and symptoms, we would have missed the boat in many patients. So we often screen in medicine for diseases to try to detect them before they become symptomatic. Usually when a diabetic presents with blurred vision, it's already far advanced and would require quite intensive medical management to try to control it or even get it to regress. And not in all cases when they present in that manner are we able to, get their vision back. So they usually remain with some permanent deficit. So we do like to screen early, as the great work done by the Diabetic Association and their eye screening programs, because that saved many a person their vision.
Thank you. Thank you for that plug, Dr. Ramdeen.
Yes.
In addition to blurry vision, are there any other common symptoms that people should be looking out for?
Floaters in the eye usually can present as well if people get small amounts of hemorrhage or bleeding into the what's called a vitreous cavity or the jelly of the eye. So blurred vision, fluctuating vision, and the onset of new floaters or little black floaters especially can indicate small levels of hemorrhage or bleeding within the eye. Distortion is also a symptom, and blurring can vary from distortion. For example, if I look at a door frame and it may appear blurry, but with distortion, the edges of the door frame may look wavy. Sometimes that indicates macular edema or pulling or traction on the retina from diabetic scar tissue. And little black floaters is also a sign of bleeding in the eye or hemorrhage. So people that notice those types of symptoms, blurred vision, distortion when looking at straight edges that appear wavy, or little black floaters or entire clouding of vision, which can represent a hemorrhage in the eye, they need to be seen very urgently.
Thank you. And one more naive question here. Would dry eyes be a particular concern for people living with diabetes?
That's a good question. So it depends on the cause of the dry eye. Lots of diabetics also have coexisting issues. They sometimes exist in a state of dehydration, and poor nutrition, and all those things affect the surface of the eye, and the ocular surface when it's affected leads to dry eye or watery eyes. You can have reduction in the lacrimal gland function depending on, if they have high circulating antibodies or high circulating proteins or inflammatory proteins. So yes, they can also present with dry eye. So it's good to lubricate the eyes. But from our perspective, it's not a huge problem. What we're trying to do is prevent permanent blindness. And that really is the aim of diabetic screening, to detect these patients early who can have damage potentially to their retina.
Thank you, Dr. Ramdeen. Now, as you would imagine, a lot of people living with different conditions have white coat anxiety. Could you help put our mind at ease and let us know what would normally happen during a diabetic eye exam?
So eye examinations in general are really not something to be worried about. There's nothing painful in the process. It may be sometimes laborious and time consuming to test everything, especially in a screening program. So generally in diabetic screening programs, we may put just drops to dilate a patient and take photographs of the retina and then examine those photographs of the back of the eyes, to detect any damage from the diabetes itself. So nothing more than maybe just screening your vision tests. So looking at the chart and calling out the letters or figures. They may involve testing the pressure, which involves a puff of air to the eye, and some drops put in so that we can dilate your pupil when the pupil is dilated, that takes about, 25, 30 minutes in a diabetic to get them fully dilated. It may blur your vision for a couple hours after while the drops are working, but those drops wear off, usually within a couple hours, and it allows us to get a good look at the back of the eye and look for any small changes in the retina that may clue us in that something more sinister is lurking. More comprehensive eye exams tend to be better than just mass screening programs. So if anything is detected, you tend to be referred on to your optometrist or ophthalmologist who does a more comprehensive eye examination. That would involve checking your prescription for your glasses, which is putting up lenses, testing the eye pressures better, using more sophisticated equipment, dilating the eye again to look for things like cataract, glaucoma, and also examination of the retina for changes to the back of the eye. Nowadays, we also employ a lot of technology. So we may, aside from just doing photography, we will also do something called an OCT scan, which uses light to image the retina and the different layers. It also images the optic nerve, and it gives us a lot more information at the back of the eye. An OCT scan is nothing dangerous. It doesn't carry any x-rays or lasers within it, but just uses a beam of light and light scatter to detect the various levels in the retina where we can detect changes.
Dr. Ramdeen, so I'm getting a message here that we need to pay some bills. We need to take a commercial break. Let's pause for a course.
All right, thank you there very much, gentlemen. Of course, you're listening to Diabetes. And you, is your roof all tired, drippy with the drip drip? Roof Mechanics and Company Limited has you covered, literally, from the metal decking and the custom sheeting to flashings and aluminum guttering. All your roofing needs are covered. If you find them in Debe, you can find them there, in Kunupi as well, or online at www.roofmechanicstt.com. Roof Mechanics and Company Limited, they got you covered. We take a short break and we shall return.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Folks, we now return to our diabetes. And you remember Dr. Andrew Dan, who's not in today. We do have Brian Coburn and his guests. Back to you guys.
Thank you. Dr. Ramdeen, hope you can remember where you left off. We were talking about what happens during a diabetic eye exam.
Yes. So I was saying generally it involves putting some drops or instilling drops in the eye, which may blur your vision for an hour or two, but that is to allow us to examine the back of the eye or the retina and take either photographs or photographs and imaging of the retina and the retinal circulation, looking for areas within the retina of any diabetic damage. That includes diabetic macular edema or swelling at the back of the eye or in the retina, and also assessing the circulation for background diabetic retinopathy or areas of poor circulation, which we call pre-proliferative diabetic retinopathy, or leakage at the back of the eye that includes bleeding areas, or what we call proliferative diabetic retinopathy or new blood vessel growth. So all these are things we look for at screening, but at no part, any part of the screening process is painful.
Right. So perhaps because it's a little unpredictable how long the blurring might persist, you would recommend you bring a friend to drive you, or you
definitely I would advise you don't drive that morning or afternoon if you have dilating drops. Sometimes after a couple screenings, you're able to assess how long it usually takes yourself for the drops to wear off. But certainly I'd advise that a friend bring you, and also walk with a pair of shades, because the glare and sunlight can quite affect the eyes when the pupils are dilated. But once they wear off, you tend to recover very well.
Okay. So thank you. let's move on to some of the treatment options, perhaps with a focus on injections. So once someone is diagnosed, what are the main treatment options available for both diabetic retinopathy and diabetic macular edema?
So when someone is diagnosed and we do the screening examining the retina, we assess the severity of disease and usually work out a plan of treatment for these patients. So it's not uncommon now for diabetics who present either with diabetic macular edema or diabetic retinopathy to have injections in their eye. Previously, there was only one injection available, which was called bevacizumab. It was an off-label product, meaning it was not fully FDA approved in its formulation for treatment of diabetic eye disease, but was widely used and safely used throughout the world for treating disease. The theory was that when you get damage to the retina from diabetic retinopathy, it damaged the blood vessel wall, or what we call the endothelium or inner lining of the wall. And with that damage to the wall, it released substances called VEGF, which stands for epithelium-derived growth factor, that caused further damage and acceleration of the retinopathy. So these medications were inhibitors of VEGF, and when given in the eye, reduced diabetic macular edema, and it also reduced progression of new blood vessel growth in the eye and caused regression of those vessels that bled in the eye. It required frequent dosing, so usually every month people will get injections depending on the severity of the disease. And we used to look for what we call the treat and extend strategy, meaning we would treat vigorously, like injections every month, until the retinopathy got under control, and then try to extend the period of injections out to maybe 6 weeks, and then maybe an injection every 3 months, and then maybe every 6 months or 4 months, depending on how the retina was looking and healing. There are newer medications available on the market now, which are approved or FDA approved for use in the eye. So there's aflibercept and more recently, faricimab, which are medications specifically designed to work on the VEGF pathway. And faricimab is one that works in a dual pathway by working on VEGF as well as angiopoietin, which is another molecule of inflammation inside the eye. So it has a dual effect on it. And these medications in our practice have proven to be quite a lot more effective in early control and management of diabetic eye disease, but they do come at a considerably greater cost than what we used to use previously. So as you know, in all pharmaceuticals, as newer medications come out and newer generation of drugs come out, it usually comes out at a cost disadvantage to us. But at the end of the day, you know, it's our practice to at least give the options of injections that are available and the costing, as well as the frequency and the dosing. But all diabetic eye disease has to be managed in a way and in conjunction with the overall health of the patient and their overall diabetic control. Because if that remains out of control, you can get 100 injections in your eye and get nowhere, I often say. So it has to go hand in hand with systemic control as well.
So
other things that can be injected in the eye is steroids. In the old days, we used to give a lot of steroid injections to the eye. Steroids affect the eye differently than the anti-VEGF drugs. But sometimes we use a multi-pronged approach of both steroid and anti-VEGF medications injected in the eye to try and reduce macular edema and swelling specifically. The longer macular edema persists, it does more damage to the cells in the retina. So it does require sometimes quite aggressive treatment in the early days to bring it under control. When it persists for prolonged periods, 6 to 12 months or more, it does cause substantial damage to the photoreceptor cells. So your eye doctor may seem aggressive initially by giving frequent injections to bring it under control and reduce the swelling in the retina bed as a matter of urgency before permanent damage ensues.
So just to make sure we understand, how do these the higher costs associated with these newer treatments, how is that offset by the any differences from the traditional therapies?
Well, it's not that it's offset. So generally, I think most ophthalmologists will start off with the most economical treatment in terms of drug availability, depending on the patient's, you know, circumstances, and try to bring some measure of control to the diabetic macular edema or diabetic retinopathy when it's diagnosed. In the old days, when we had no options, we would continuously give the same medication over and over, some people getting 10, 12, 15 injections of the same things. Now that we have newer generation of medications that are more effective, if we see someone who has presented late with lots of macular edema, we may advise that you need to get this, you know, it's probably in your best interest to get this drug on board in your eyes as soon as possible, because it can more rapidly clear the edema. In general, we may, if it's not been there for very long, we may start at the lower cost options, and then after two or three injections, if we're not getting the response we want, move to the higher cost options. At this stage, it is really, for the doctor's perspective, looking at the prevention of permanent blindness in your eye. So, you know, looking at the cost, yes, is one thing, but we're looking to achieve some measure of control of advanced diabetic retinopathy that is sight-threatening. We will sometimes, you know, go to the better medications first up and combine them even with implants of steroid into the vitreous cavity to try and bring the swelling in the retina down as soon as possible. We may even combine it with bits of laser therapy as well, again, to try to achieve maximum resolution of swelling and edema in the retina and damage from the diabetes and frank bleeding in the eye as soon as possible. Patients that we fail to get control in with injections may have to go on to have vitreoretinal surgery, which costs, you know, four or five times what some of these injections cost. And that usually, you know, by that time, substantial damage would have ensued and sometimes irreversible sight loss. So we weigh up the financial options with the costs of disability, you know, loss of function, decrease in lifestyle, decrease of independence. You know, being visually impaired is not something anyone wants. And a lot of these strategies in diabetic eye disease in the late and advanced stages are rescue strategies, meaning some type of permanent damage has already happened, and we're trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Right. So that sounds like you tailor, of course, the treatment for particular patients.
And every diabetic is different. Some respond very well, very quickly. Some, the diabetic retinopathy is more recalcitrant to treatment, and you have to look for other modalities, combined modalities of injections plus laser, injections plus surgery, ongoing injections. You know, despite maximum treatment, some people still progress, at which time they may have significant neuropathy and nephropathy from their diabetes as well. So these patients tend not to do well when usually late detection is one of the primary causes of patients landing in that situation. Late detection, poor control, poor compliance.
Right. So then, wrapped up inside of that, I'm compelled to ask, why is it so important for patients to stick to their treatment schedule then? And what happens if you start missing?
Well, absolutely important to stick to the schedule. And generally, like I said, every patient's different. So the scheduling tends to be based on the severity of the disease, the advancement or progression of the disease, the level of diabetic control, and the overall HbA1c readings. We anticipate, you know, things progressing, or we're looking to stabilize things, and we may want to see patients very frequently to know the effectiveness of the treatment. If you get an injection and don't come back for 6 months and we still see fluid there, we wouldn't know, was, did the injection work and clear the fluid, and did it recur? So we would plan the follow-ups based on specifics that we're looking for. And when you miss your follow-ups, we lose vital information as to the efficacy of the drug, because it's not uncommon for edema to clear and then recur following an injection. So that's why sometimes we need to piggyback injections or increase the frequency or interval of injecting. And that depends on the severity of the damage to the blood vessels and their levels of control, both blood pressure control and diabetic control. Because if these little blood vessels are leaky from the diabetes, your blood pressure is like the tap that controls the flow. Slight fluctuations of blood pressure will cause them to leak more. So we need to look at the patient holistically, manage their glucose, manage their blood pressure, manage their diabetic eye disease, and then tailor their treatment depending on the severity of disease and depending on their response to treatment. And sometimes you have to step it up, sometimes you can step it down. But when you default from your appropriate follow-up, we are deprived vital information as to the course of treatment. Many patients are non-compliant because they receive injections and they see no benefit, like it's not getting better. That's not uncommon. But then had they not received injections, it would have been a lot worse. I'm in practice, I've existed in a time before injections were available, and many of these patients with severe diabetic retinopathy would just go on to go blind. I think the medications that we have now have saved the sights of millions of people all around the world, and new advances are always taking place. But when patients don't see a dramatic, rapid improvement in their vision, they get disenchanted and default to treatment. That should never be the case. Sometimes that medication is what's holding everything together. You're looking for progression, for resolution, and we're looking for non-progression to blindness. Those are two completely different things. And sometimes patients don't get it. They're like, well, I just spent $1,000 on an injection in my eye and I'm more fluid this week than I was last week. But you're not understanding in your mind what's going on inside of your body.
Right.
And you're, you know, and they will be like, well, you speak to your friend and he's like, well, I'm going to try this next doctor and try this next doctor and try this next doctor. And people go doctor shopping and doctor hopping, thinking one doctor is better than the other. But at the end of the day, they do themselves a great disservice by doing things like that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, doctor. Those remarks were absolutely necessary. And we're right on time for another break now. So
thank you.
Taking you back to the DJ, and we will resume.
Hey, drippy with the drip drip. Drippy with the drip drip.
What you doing, boy?
Well, the rain coming down, and the drip's making a nice rhythm. Hey, drippy with the drip drip. Drippy with the drip drip.
Boy, stop it. You know how long I have to fix that?
Why not check out Roof Mechanics and Company? They have quality roofing materials. They supply everything from purlins, I-beams, hot channels, and metal decking to new wave sheeting, corrugated standing seam panels, custom flashing, and aluminum guttering and more at amazing prices.
You being for real?
I being real, girl. Visit Roof Mechanics and Company today at Debe or Canupia, or you could shop online at roofmechanicstt.com.
I go in now. Me and taking you on this trip, no?
Visit Roof Mechanics and Company dot Limited today in Etech Park, Debe or Monroe Road, Canupia. Roof Mechanics and Company Limited. We make lasting impressions.
World on Freedom 106.5 FM every Friday from noon to 3 p.m. for expert advice on how to get your business online and prosper in the digital world with renowned Caribbean digital expert Karen Rose.
This week on the digital world, we have an action-packed show.
We're going inside one of the biggest tech launches for Trinidad and Tobago, Anansi, the new national digital assistant. Joining Karen in studio are IGOV TT CEO Dr. Inshan Mirjon and Deputy CEO Charles Bob Semple to break it all down. And Nancy is here to untangle the web of government information, a single trusted source for official answers about public services, available 24/7. No more runaround, just clear answers at your fingertips. Don't miss this conversation, The Digital World with Karen Rose.
You don't want to miss this action-packed show of The Digital World right here on Freedom 106.5.
The Digital World is live on radio every Friday from noon to 3 p.m. with the world-renowned Caribbean digital expert, Karen Rose, and streaming on our website, freedom1065.com. Freedom is being in full control of your time.
That's right, people. The Digital World. Check it out tomorrow around this time, 12 noon to 3 p.m. We return right now to Diabetes and You.
Thank you. Dr. Ramdeen, you were just telling us why it's so important for patients to stick to their treatment schedules. And we heard some of the pitfalls there. But do you have any advice for patients that would help them stay consistent with their eye care?
I think knowledge is the most important thing. So certainly, if you are diagnosed as a diabetic, and especially if you have been diagnosed with diabetic eye disease, it is very important you follow the advice of your healthcare provider. If you are receiving treatment for diabetic eye disease, it is extremely important you follow the course. Much of what may be treating more, or the doctor may be treating, can be helped, and certainly we're looking for non-progression of disease. If you understand what's happening in your body, then I do think that you're motivated. And diabetes is not a death sentence. There are many treatment modalities to try and limit the damage that is done, and in some ways sometimes even improve things for you. It is a long-term and a lifestyle eye disease and systemic disease problem. Doing regular HbA1cs is vitally important to monitor your blood sugar control. So every 3 months, an HbA1c should be done. Blood pressure testing regularly should also be done for diabetics. Please make available, all your readings and recordings to your general practitioner or endocrinologist who is looking after your diabetic status, and have frequent eye checks. I think early detection of disease is the key to having good outcomes and good prognosis and long-lasting vision. No one wants their vision taken away from them. I think that's the one a sense that no one wants to lose, if you had to lose a sense. And so you must become self-motivated and read. The internet's available. There's lots of information. There's provided in lovely formats through AI. Read about it. Look at what people say on people's experiences from legitimate websites, obviously. And if you take a holistic approach to it and stay in the hands of good professionals for both the systemic disease as well as the eye care, as well as the neurologists and nephrologists, you will do yourself a great service in avoiding long-term complications from diabetes.
Okay, that got me wondering, is there anything else that you would recommend best things for people with diabetes to do to protect their vision long-term?
Well, I think it all starts with the management of diabetes, which is, a healthy lifestyle, healthy eating, combined team-oriented approach, dietitian, physician, ophthalmologist, nephrologist. Get everyone involved in your care, because it's your body. Without your body, nothing else matters. So to keep yourself healthy, having a good diet, eating, you know, green leafy vegetables, you know, things with lots of antioxidants, monitoring your blood glucose, walking, mild exercise, going outdoors, you know, enjoying the environment, having less stress in life, managing your blood pressure control. Those things go a far long way to improvement in both the mental, the spiritual, and the physical aspect of your overall well-being. And I think when people get into that space that they want to look after their body, they want to live a healthy lifestyle, they want to live a long life without disability, then they become more conscious and proactive in the management of their overall health. And I think if we all thought of it that way and involved, you know, we have many great professionals in our country that can guide you. You have the benefits of associations like the DATT. These people give you real information in real time. And if people pursue that information, digest it, and make it work for them, they're going to avoid a lot of severe problems later on in their life. And I think it all starts with mental fortitude.
And those are some great sources of information. Where can people get their eyes screened around the country?
Well, I think generally the Diabetic Association has an eye screening program, but I would also encourage a general sort of fully comprehensive eye screening, not just for diabetes, but for things like glaucoma, which is extremely prevalent in our society, cataract formation, like you mentioned earlier, dry eye. These things, you know, can all have significant impact on our vision. So a full comprehensive screening with your optometrist or eye health professional or your ophthalmologist for more severe diseases, it's a good starting point. There are lots of great optometrists. The University of the West Indies runs a great optometry program, and we have lots of young budding optometrists willing to get involved in your eye care and eye health. And I do think make use of their services. And those are some of the things that I generally recommend.
Thank you, Doctor.
One more plug. So we do have the Eastern Regional Health Authority is embarking on its diabetic screening process, and we are rolling out. So we do have it at the Enhanced Health Center in Sandy Grande. We're going to be rolling it out into communities like Toko, Mayaro, and maybe Beach and Rio Claro. So we are looking at pushing our diabetic screening program through the public health sector to go hand in hand with our school vision screening program with the ERHA. So those are some novel things that are happening both in the public sector. So not everything has to be private sector driven, but our screening programs do exist in the public sector as well. So if it's available in health centers near you, please make a concerted effort to have take advantage of that service.
Okay. So this has been a really informative session, Dr. Ramdeen.
Thank you.
Do you wanna put it all together for us in a nice neat package, a final message you'd like to share with our listeners who are living with diabetes or someone who is living with someone living with diabetes?
Diabetes is a systemic disease, but it's not a life sentence. Many diabetics actually live a healthier lifestyle after they've been diagnosed with diabetes than before. Patients who take control of their health and ownership of their issues and make lifestyle modifications to try and help themselves usually do far better than those that do not. It starts with mental preparedness, as well as coupled with management of the diseases, but by accessing the right professionals. If it starts to affect your eyes, do not, you know, bury your head in the sand. Take ownership of it, seek the care of the real professionals that are able to manage the situation, Do not be discouraged if in the early days you do not get the results you expect. The overall emphasis on treatment is long-term management to avoid disability and visual problems. So it's not a life sentence. It can be managed, and you can live with diabetes successfully and live a long, healthy, and fulfilling life. But it does not do you any great service to ignore what you have to live with. If you embrace it, have a team-oriented approach, mental and physical fortitude to fight it, you will live a long, happy, healthy, and fulfilling life.
Thank you. We might have time for just one question, which was squeezed in. It was whether or not difficulty seeing in low light or night vision, or having blank or dark areas, would also be some of the symptoms to look out for.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there are multiple causes of things like that, whether it be, cataract formation that's causing the difficulty with night vision, hemorrhaging within the eye, or perfusion of the retina. All those are symptoms that can be attributable to diabetes, but they could also be attributable to other eye conditions as well. So if anyone's experiencing something like that, they do need to seek the help of their healthcare provider and their optometrist or ophthalmologist to have it checked to see what is the actual cause of those symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ramdin, you've been really most excellent. This has been
a very
educational session. And I'm sure all our members and general public would have benefited from listening today. So thank you, sir.
It's been my pleasure. And thank you for having me, Dr. Coburn, and Freedom 106. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Right. And turning you back to Freedom 106 now. Thank you.
Folks, thank you very much. There, you've been listening to Diabetes and You today. Of course, we had Dr. Coburn filling in there for Andrew Danu. Keep it locked.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.